You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kinds of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today I'm super happy because of two reasons. First, I talked to a very well-known statistician, Chris. And second, we talk about a very, very interesting topic, AI. And the topic of today is around a paper Chris wrote, what the future role of statisticians will be in an AI world, and do we actually need statisticians in the future? Will we all become redundant by AI solutions? So before we dive into the discussion, Chris, maybe you can introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah, certainly. Thanks for the invitation to be here, Alexander. Yeah, so I'm Chris Harbron. So nowadays I'm an independent statistical consultant. Before that, I've been in the pharmaceutical industry for many years, working for a variety of roles in a variety of companies, most recently within the methodology group at Roche. I guess within the AI world, my backstory of this, probably around about 20 years ago, was one of the cycles around the omics technologies, which people started thinking about big data and how that could be used. And techniques like machine learning were starting to be thought about in that situation. And I got involved with that, and as that developed into thinking around ideas around personalized healthcare, yeah, got involved with those type of things, as well as biomarkers more generally. And then, of course, over the past few years, there's been this explosion of interest in AI. So again, it's a natural extension of that to get in, involved, and yeah, be involved in that type of activity.
So maybe I could start with some kind of provocative thing, a protocol, and statistical analysis plan, the programs, the report, then maybe even parts of the manuscripts and abstracts. Well, I can all do that with AI. If I would be kind of a little bit versed physician, yeah, couldn't, or maybe just a medical writer or an assistant, or maybe even some kind of AI agent, yeah, could that the AI solution do everything around a clinical study?
Well, potentially it could in some senses. So I think the technologies today, particularly when we look at agentic AI, which is the most recent development, which allows for specialization. So effectively, we can think of an agent within an AI space as being a large language model, like ChatGPT, which has been specifically trained on one area of expertise, whether it be pharmacokinetic modeling or biomarkers or whatever. And if we were to do that, we could properly generate all of the documents that you've mentioned there. And initially, they may look quite plausible. Yeah, they may look quite good. But then if we started to read them, I think we'd start to get a little bit worried about things in normal case. I think we've all had the experience when we're using a large language model where suddenly it traps out something with huge confidence, which is clearly not true, what we call a hallucination. And so we cannot be sure of that confidence of that. I think there's also another subtle layer below that, is that actually, if we think back in the development of all of these kind of documents, in any team I've ever been in, it's never been a straightforward linear process. There's always a huge amount of circulation goes around. And I might write the statistics section based on what I understand the protocol to be about. It goes to their physician, and they've got a completely different interpretation of what the study was around. And it's only by going to that level of detail that we're actually able to come to resolution. What do we actually want the study to be doing? What do we want to be achieving in this study? If we are just outsourced that, of course, that to a large language model or an AI system, then we're going to lose that kind of discussion, that understanding. It's just going to be whatever the AI assumes we want it to do, which is probably not going to be correct and certainly won't have agreement for everybody.
So in a sense, these documents, starting with a protocol, is not just a document. It is a tool to help facilitate discussions, so to say.
Yes, yeah. And I think that the whole process of that, and especially the way it forces a lot of rigor and real precision about what's going to be called at that, is really critical in designing a good study. And I think the adoption of the Estermans framework is a great example of that. It doesn't allow for any wiggle room or misunderstandings because we're being really precise what we're going to do within that particular study.
I think another point is also any innovation will be very, very difficult to assume from an AI partner, isn't it?
Yes, I think it would be. Yes, yeah. Naturally, what an AI model does is it just reflects the data it's been trained on. That's what they're very good at doing. So, yeah, their starting position for any protocol will be all the protocols would be written previously. Now, in some ways, that's not different to maybe we would write it. If you asked me to write a protocol in the new area, the first thing I'd go and do was dig out a previous one and take parts of it. But, you're absolutely right. Without, a lot of additional input or work, which probably has to come from the human, you're not going to get an innovation or some different type of design to what's gone beforehand because they're just trying to replicate their training data.
Another point that I have seen in designing clinical trials, you always need to make compromises. Yeah, you can't have everything. You don't have all the time in the world. You don't have all the money in the world. You don't have all the patients in the world. Yeah, so there's always real life conditions that you need to have. And under these conditions, of course, you need to find some suitable balances. How would AI work with that? So if I, for example, say to AI, I want to have a study that is not bigger than so many patients and doesn't run longer than 3 years, let's say, and doesn't cost more than 10 million, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so again, potentially you could do that if you could specify your limitations about things. I've got a budget of 500 million. I've got this amount of time. I want to maximize but the objective of this study is about minimizing the time to market. Yeah, this is what I need for a PTS value and so on and so on. It could probably come up with some compromise which would meet those criteria. Now, there's two challenges there. One is really being explicitly able to state those criteria, which again, is typically something you do lots of iterative discussions about things normally. And the other is, will it come to the trade-off, the balance that we would want to have? It may be that it achieves that things, but it actually completely cuts out all of the biomarker assessments because they cost lots of money and they're not relevant. Yeah, I did see them as being relevant. The biomarker scientists, on the other hand, is going to get very annoyed about that. And yeah, there's a lot of value which can be achieved from those. So the balance which it will achieve, it will try and do something sensible because, as everything else, it doesn't necessarily mean it's what we would want to be achieving as an optimal compromise.
Yeah, I think that is also coming back to the discussion. Yeah, in team meeting, you can then come up with all kind of different solutions. Especially you can, through these discussions, you can better clarify what actually the goal is that we want to reach here. Because very often that is not so super clear. Yeah. Another problem that AI can't solve. And also, I think the other point is looking into the bigger picture. For example, we might think about, we've just focused on the phase one study and all the discussions about the phase one study. But could we actually optimize things if we also include aspects of the phase 1b study into it? Or what kind of implications would that have for the phase 2 study? Can we optimize the whole thing a little bit differently so that we get better through the phase 2 study and then maybe save in the phase 2 study? There's so many different aspects that I think it's really, really difficult to just get out of AI.
Yeah, and I think there's also something about just the experience which anybody working in drug development has accumulated over time from seeing things, experiencing things, maybe not going quite as they wanted and so on, which is, again, very hard to capture in any way and put into things. But if you're in a meeting and you're discussing things and you've got someone who's got that experience, it really shines through and they can quickly identify where things could be going wrong in the future and other things. And I think this speaks to something which I think you always found really interesting, that I don't see the future as being a completely AI world, but AI will be part of it. And the real interesting challenge is going to be how we get AI in humans to work better. I've always thought it's a bit unfortunate, actually, AI's got the name AI with intelligence in it. Because, yeah, intelligence, I think, is something humans have, but it's a different type of intelligence, for want of a better word, to what we get from an AI. And in some ways, it'd be better if it had a different word, because people automatically try and think of them as being the same type of things. But I think if we then thought of AI as being something which is a complementary capability, and how we work together at complementary capability, instead of just being competition, who is the most intelligent, that may give us other ways of the best way of being working together.
I kind of think of AI very often as kind of librarian that has access to a huge kind of library of all kind of different things and can quickly pull out all kind of different answers from this library. The problem, however, is your answers will very much depend on the quality of your questions. I think that's another kind of area where kind of you need to ask the right questions in order to do this. And then, of course, understand whether what you get back is sensible or some complete BS. And we know that there's a lot of BS actually out there. I just recently stepped over a post that talked about kissing skills and how that relates to the months of birth of you, and that there were 6 specific months that you're a better kisser, and the other 6 you're not as good in terms of kissing. I was thinking, like, my gut feeling tells me that this is complete rubbish.
Yes, yeah. No, absolutely. And I think one of the clear takeaways at the moment is that if we are using AI to be generating anything of any importance, then having a really thorough review of it is absolutely critical. Keeping that human in the loop as part of that review process and checking what's provided is absolutely important. This is something, and as we think more broadly about, say, the medical applications, we can use them in hospitals and so on. Again, fantastically useful, but they realize they have to include those very rigorous review processes. And that itself creates other problems, because one of the features about, I think, humans, which may be less problem than AI, is that humans are fundamentally lazy. And actually, if we've been using AI and it's generated 3 outputs and we're happy with those, often when we look at the 4th, 5th, and 6th, we're not going to look at it so rigorously. And how do we keep up the quality of that review in the future? That's sort of one of the big concerns I have moving forwards.
I think that speaks to the trust that we have into the AI output. Why should we trust a statistician more than what we get from an AI output?
That's a really good question. I think that we know and understand this is from the AI. There are a whole range of risks which are involved with things and the outputs. We hope from the statistician, and I think that sort of is a role which all of us have got to keep on developing, pushing in there, that there is an added layer of understanding within that, which you don't get from the AI. We got that additional confidence which we can provide to people, the understanding why the reasons behind things, to be able to interact with them and understand their understandings better. And that can be uncomfortable at times. Sometimes it may be actually a case that there's a challenging, which is the one of the role the statisticians can provide, which AI, we know, can generally often be actually doesn't like doing. It can be very agreeable at times. But I think it's a really good underlying question. There's always this challenge, even in pre-AI world, about how we produce trust and confidence in people and how we continue to build that.
I think for me, if I think about trust, I usually think about three different things. The first is competence, the second is care, and the third is character. So competence, well, maybe AI can become pretty good at some point, but AI doesn't really care. So it doesn't care whether you succeed on it or not succeed. Yeah, it's a machine.
Yes, yep.
And where it will not, for example, as just generally tell you something that you don't want to hear. Yeah, like this is not feasible.
Yes.
Which is, nobody wants to hear that. Yeah. But of course, it's something that people need to hear so that you can come up with something that is feasible and meets the demands. When you also, something fails, who's accountable?
Yeah, that is absolutely one of the unanswered questions at the moment. And this is potentially some very big, in the wider world, some very big questions, because it becomes litigation, legal standings. And at the moment, it's probably one of the big blockers in the adoption of AI in a lot of critical systems, because until you've established case law to understand who will have to be responsible, nobody wants to take that risk. Now, certainly in an internal case, I think inside a company, companies are still very much structured on human reporting lines. And so I think there's a very clear accountability lies still within that human reporting line. Yeah, I think it's fair to say probably in every company that the person who is accountable, is a person, and it'll be the person who's accountable before. And yeah, as in a way, we've always been accountable for the work, the outputs that we produce. Yeah, I have to be confident in it right. If they're produced by AI, then I think it's still very much going through that same line. The person who is the user of the AI has to ensure that they're comfortable with that. Yeah, and take accountability, take responsibility for it.
Yeah. So if you get rid of your whole statistics department, can't blame the statisticians anymore.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit for recommendations for the future. Yeah. So for, let's say, the typical statisticians that working on clinical trials, real-world evidence, any kind of data projects, pretty much hands-on, what would you recommend for them to learn and to change and maybe to think differently about?
I think underlying this would be this idea of curiosity, which I think is something we've always been encouraging in any sense. Yeah, there's this world out there, which is AI, just for people to explore it, read about it, listen to information about it. There's huge wealth of information and stories about AI. So there's huge opportunities to be learning about that and to experiment and play with it in any setting like that. So I think that's sort of the basic bottom line within that. I think it's certainly going to be a case that AI in one form or another is going to be with us moving forward. So I don't think it's something we've got the opportunity to stick our heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening. And over time, I'm sure in the same way as a Google search was quite revolutionary when they first came out.
4 years
ago that was. Yes. Email, think of the change that's made to our life. There will be parts of AI which get just adopted into our everyday lifestyle, our everyday way of being as humans, which we don't even think about in the future. And we want to make sure you're part of that and able to do that. Otherwise, you'll be operating at a complete disadvantage.
Completely agree. I try to test AI for all kind of different tasks that I'm doing. Yeah, so especially tasks where I need to generate text or documents or things like this. I really like doing it. Of course, I read things. And what I also like is to basically ask the AI what additional information they need. And I think that was one of the best hacks whatsoever. Yeah. So that you can provide better prompts and then refine it and refine it and refine it. That's also how I've written my book. But if you then also have test things out, you can become more confident over time in what to do, how to use it, and that can really accelerate things.
Yeah, and I think that's a great thing of the experimenting. And if there's an activity which you're doing which is basically a bit dull, feels a bit repetitive, then it's probably a way AI can help you within that. But again, that experience of doing things, and I'm not sure of your experience in writing, but certainly when I've used it, I've always felt that probably half of the comments it makes, I think, are really valuable. They're things where it just structures the sentence better than I had, and you take that as good feedback in the future. But probably about half the cases, actually, it makes a suggestion, but it's not what I wanted. I'd written in that way because I had a reason for writing in that way. And I think that understanding is going to be really important for getting there.
I also use it for complimenting me. Yeah. So, for example, you get an email that makes you very angry. Yeah. And we all get that sooner or later in our work. In the past, I would have kind of drafted something, slept over it, and then refined it, thought about, do I need to send it at all these kind of different things. But now I can also use AI to write an answer and tell AI to write it with a very different mood than I have. Yeah. So I might be really frustrated, angry, upset, but I can tell AI to write it in a very, very understanding, calm voice, very solution oriented. And which I can't at that moment, but I know I want it, but I can't. Yeah. And that's another kind of very, very good thing.
Yeah. And no, I think that's a great example. But yeah, I do think within that, we've got to be careful about the authenticity of that. Occasionally you get something which is clearly written by AI and you've lost that personal touch. It's doing something like that, but just not taking verbatim what's written by the AI would be a very helpful approach there.
Completely agree. I don't use AI for my social media actually anymore, because social media degrades AI written posts, which is in a way kind of weird, because all these different social media have AI built into it and suggest you to use it, but then it doesn't display it. Anything else that you would like the listener to take away from this podcast episode?
I think the overwhelming position which I've had tried to communicate my paper was actually there is obviously things will change with AI, but things have always been changing over time in any career. And I think statistics is no exception within that. But actually, sort of, I try to be positive about this. What I would hope to see going forwards is that maybe some of the less interesting, the less rewarding parts of our job, we can actually reduce. We're not going to completely eliminate them. AI will provide a really good tool for doing that. But actually, at the same time, opens up a range of opportunities for other things we've been doing with that time. I don't think it's the case that there's less need for statisticians. In fact, I think there's probably going to be more need. I think that we're in a world that there's going to be more data, new endpoints, which come from AI technologies like in imaging or wearable devices, other analyses which may become feasible because we've got a lot of data we can now use with AI to sort of get additional insights to. So I actually see a very sort of promising future, enlightening future there. And probably many careers, I think, actually, statistics is probably one of the best places to be able to really ride and thrive within the AI world.
And honestly, we work in a very innovative area. So there will be always new things that we are working on that AI hasn't worked on before and where we need to think differently about. And lastly, we talked a lot about the human aspect that will never go away.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I think those are the skills which become more important and more useful than ever. So, yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much, Chris, for this interesting discussion about AI. As we are recording this, is the PSI conference. And there's also, of course, a lot about AI. When that gets published, this AI conference is already going, but this topic will definitely not go away.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks very much for the discussion, Icon.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS for help with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.